This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's episode 518 today. Which means that I think we have 2 episodes to go to get to 10 years worth of podcast. And I actually had notes today already, and then I kind of forgot that I had notes. So then I made more notes. But I think I'm going to go with my second set of notes. I had a first set of notes that was talking about the conspiracy theory boom on YouTube and can it be contained. Maybe I'll get back to that at some point. But for this week, climate change. We'll talk about climate change in a bit. Everything's pottering along. We had a calmer week this week than last week. Although, it was last Thursday night. Okay, this is a valuable story. It was last Thursday night. Did I do the podcast normal last week? I think I did. So I think I talked last week about some of the disruption and then, you know, recovery and the good job that everybody was doing and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It was great. Good people working together. Ta-da. Okay, so then last Thursday night, it's one of those really weird things that you get into when you're dealing with data at some sort of non-trivial scale. I cannot imagine dealing with the kind of data that somebody like a Walmart or an Amazon or a cyber source that is owned by Visa. I just can't imagine dealing with the type of data levels that they deal with. I know that even with the level of data that we're dealing with, which are our maximums, we have one table that has 77, I think was the last count I looked at, 77 million records in it. That is granular contribution data back to 2005. Okay, so that's not, in the world of big data, that's not huge. But it's enough that you can get into some of the weirdest coincidences. And we as human beings, we're all about correlation. So we have a tendency to cluster things that happen together as being related to each other. It's very easy for us to do that mentally. And that is actually something that you really have to be careful of, because the old saying is correlation does not equal causation. So last week, we've been battling along with these problems, and things had gotten to the point where it looked like it was going to go bad on us, and it was the main database server, yada, yada, yada. So then it looked like Wednesday night, they got some things changed. That looked better. Some things were accelerating. It was good. Great. Man, I hope I haven't told this story before. If I have, I apologize. I don't think I did, because I think I did the podcast last week on Thursday. Anyway, so Thursday night is going to be our first full run. First full run with the changes. So, okay, great. We start into it. We're monitoring it. Things are clipping along. I mean, it's good. Things are just going along, and it's like, hey, okay, great, great, great. We get all the way to our export, where we're pushing data back to the cash receipts process so that it knows the information that went out on the receipt so it can reproduce that information to the screen when data is being done. data entry is being done. When those pieces of paper come back, you know, we error off. That's kind of weird. So I go and do a quick look, and it has a customer type on it that's just completely wrong. It's underscore underscore, and I know that means it was a blank customer type, which is weird because we supposedly screen and make sure those are all filled fields. Then later, when we're doing some other validation of our recurring credit card information, we have one of our transactions that comes across that just doesn't have any detail information associated with it. So, I mean, it's bad. The system is designed that when it comes across and we validate, if we don't have any detail information, we just stop and say, okay, obviously there is something bad wrong with this. This was required and it wasn't supplied to us, and so we just stop. So we had these two weird missing data errors back to back after the network guys had made these changes to how the database server was interacting with the drives. And of course, the first thing the flesh is going to do is it's going to go to, oh, this is trouble. This is really trouble. It's so much trouble. It's so much trouble. Because it knows it can dig in there and get my attention. Because it's not working right and records are getting dropped. We have never had records just randomly getting dropped with SQL Server. SQL Server has always been very stable for us. But you know, records are getting dropped. That's the only way this could happen. No. I've done this for long enough. I know weird stuff can happen when you scale up to the level of data that we're at. But still, it's a concern. So, I tell my buddy that I'm working with on this stuff, okay, I'll be in tomorrow, get some grocery shopping done, then I'll get in. And they were having what's called a stack talk, so, you know, whatever. So I said, we'll chase this thing down. So I get in the next day, and we start looking at it, and we just do probably 5 or 7 minutes of investigation. And then I'm sitting there looking at the audit trail on the account for this one receipt, and I'm just like, are you kidding me? Because we double check some things, and yes, we have stuff in there that's supposed to prevent that from happening. Yes. But as soon as I was like, come on. So I'll explain in a second. At the same time, we get in touch with the recurring credit card people who manage that subsystem, and we say, hey, we got a transaction across yesterday that didn't have any data associated with it for the detail side. So they started chasing that down. First, they couldn't find anything. They eventually found something. So, as it happened, we made a bunch of changes. I say we, the company. We make a bunch of changes to how our main database server interacts with its disk arrays in its virtual environment. And the very next day, on the first time we're trying to put through this data completely on the new configuration, two things happen simultaneously. One, a donor goes to the website and deletes all the designations that they were giving to for their recurring, but didn't inactivate their schedule, and apparently it has a bug that when all the designations get deleted, it doesn't automatically inactivate that schedule. I think the guys are working on that. So that's the first thing that happens. Just plain one of those hidden bugs. This code has been running for years and years and years. And then two, we got this weird customer type problem that in fact is a bug as well that has probably been in the system for 10 years, maybe 12 years. Because I wrote this code back in the mid-2000s. It was probably somewhere around I don't know, 2006, 7, 8, somewhere in there. So it's at least a decade old, this code. And it's been running happy as a clam for all that long. And we just happened to hit the configuration last Thursday night that exposed the bug. And that just happened to be on the same night that was the day after we had made all these configuration changes. And on the same night that somebody goes to, completely disconnected, goes to a website. So here's the configuration, and deletes all their designations. So here's the configuration that you had to have to hit this bug. You first of all had to have a minister and his spouse paying their tithes to headquarters on the same document. That's the first thing you had to happen. Okay? Because that document is going to get split automatically because of the way we process our tithes. So that both the husband... Well, no. First thing you have to have is you have to have a married couple who are both credentialed ministers in some way. So that's the first thing you have to have. Second thing is they both have to be paying their tithe on the same document. Because the third thing that's going to happen is that document has to get split so that each person can look up their account on the receipting on giving.ag.org and they can actually see how much they gave for their tithe. So that's the first thing that needs to happen. You got to get this document split, because when we split documents, we don't always get customer type carried over. Okay, then what has to happen is you have to have a minister who has recently moved. Because we don't just change minister addresses randomly or when we feel like it. We don't do that because there is a process whereby the districts have to be informed, the national office, the department that takes care of ministers has to be informed, that secretariat. So that has to be a process when a minister changes their address. Okay, so what happens is when a minister contacts headquarters and says, I have an address change, or when their address comes back as a bad address and we get the new forwarding address, we don't wipe out the original address. What we do is create what's called a 20-line 20 that has the new address, and everything just picks that up. Okay. So you not only had to have a married couple that were both ministers, that were both sending in their tithes on the same document so that we would split the document, they had to send in their tithe while they were still using the 20 line. And that had to get processed in the morning. And then sometime midday, Secretariat had to approve the new address and put in the new address and take off the bad address flag so the 20 line would disappear. And this all had to happen on the day that was the first day. Didn't have to happen, but this all happened to happen on the day that was the first day that we were running the new configuration. So we're running the new configuration. We have both of these random errors. Both of them expose bugs that are years old, and nothing was related to anything else. Okay, now then. So what does this all mean? What this all means is that whenever you feel the flesh within you going, ooh, you know, and start, and it's freaking out, you know, and it's just hitting this sensational mark about the sky is falling and running around like Chicken Little, this is when you should take a pause, take a deep breath, and say, there are many things I don't know at this point, but I'm just going to slow down. going to slow down. You know what? Maybe I should have called my... No, it's okay. It's all right. I was thinking, yeah, but it's fine. And I've been driving along here, and I haven't been paying attention. We are getting a little misting rain, and this morning was very exciting when I tried to get into work. My car was fishtailing around. It was exciting. I think we're okay now, but I just saw another car who was slowing down. Anyway, so the point is, there can be things that happen that have nothing to do with each other at all. And simply the fact that they happen in close proximity to each other, your flesh is going to take them and try to make a crisis out of it. It will do that because we have this tendency to correlate items that happen in close proximity. And my only advice would be, when you feel that race to an emotion, go to quiet. And tell yourself, okay, look, it looks like these things are correlated, but we won't know till we dig in a little more. Everything's fine. I will tell you, I was very happy Friday morning when I was sitting there in my skinny jeans and funny t-shirt and crazy socks, and I looked at that audit trail and went, oh, they deleted the 20 line after they put through it. And I just went, oh, that's it, you know. And my buddy I was working at, he's just like looking at me. And I'm like, are you kidding me? So anyways, that's, and that anecdote actually applies to what we're going to be talking about today. In addition to all that, I'm still working on book 10. Theoretically, this weekend, I am roughing in book 10. Theoretically. I think I have another chapter and a half of main chapters. And then I have the newsfeed stuff that I have to do, which usually goes pretty fast. Another chapter, and then I have two short epilogues to write that I'm not exactly sure how they're going to land, but I think we're going to be okay. One is creepy, so that'll be easier to write. That's a lot of writing to get done to get done in 3 days, 4 days. So I actually left work a little early today. It's only about 2:30 because I'm going to try to get a jump start on it, and then I'm going to try to plow as much as I can tomorrow. But I may need to check in at work for a few things. And then I'm going to plow as much as I can on Saturday. I should have a good solid day on Saturday. As much as I can on Sunday. But I'm on tap to run sound in both services on Sunday. Which is fine. That's fine. We'll get it figured out. So there may be some late nights in here. But I'm going to do my best to see what I can do to make this thing happen this weekend. So... this should be exciting. And there's still some things I don't quite have worked out in this book, but Jesus has helped me before, and I believe he is going to help me again. So we'll see. This will be interesting. Anyways, so all is well. All is well. God is good. He helps us every day. We had a few other little bumps in the get along this week, little hitches, but the Lord helped us through all of them, and it's good. And at this point, the system seems to be responding really well, running fine. We're not having nearly the amount of timeouts we were having. The overnight process is running hours better than it was. Hours. You know, we're consistently getting finished up with everything like at 10:30, where it used to be 12:30 and 1 o'clock. And so, you know, all is well. It's fine. All is well. We have had a little problem with a little glazing of ice this morning, especially. I had a breakfast with a buddy at 7:30 this morning, which is a little later than normal, but I was grateful to be indoors for a few more. And it was just a light glazing of ice, and so the roads actually looked okay. But I got up and onto the first main road heading out, and all of a sudden, the car just started doing the fishtaily thing, and it was like, okay. So I started, you know, pumping brakes and counter steering, and there was a few moments there when I didn't think I was going to get it under control, but I got it under control, did not put the car in the ditch, and all was well. Okay, so today, I came across this article. And I've read some of the things in this article multiple times now, so I'm willing to believe at this point that the person who wrote this article might just be sloppy and not intentional. But it's certainly easy to ascribe intentionality to the way this article is written. But I'm more than willing to say, oh, the writing is just a little sloppy. So the name of this article caught my attention, of course, because that is what articles are supposed to do. The name of this article was, "Very High Carbon Dioxide Could Suppress Cooling Clouds, Climate Change Model Warns." This is by Joel Achenbach. It's February 25th. And I should just say at this point that this article was published in the Washington Post under their climate and environment setting. The Washington Post. Okay, this is supposedly one of the bastions of truth in America now. These are the people whose slogan is "Democracy dies in the darkness." Okay. Which is a bit overwrought, but okay. So this is, and this was not an opinion piece. This was presented as a factual representation. Okay, I'm getting my mail. One moment. And I found it just fascinating because as I was moving forward through this article, I started out the article with one impression and ended up the article with a completely different impression. And in this age of TLDR, too long didn't read, this article very definitely would give one impression to the TLDR people and a whole other impression to anybody who took the time to actually finish reading the article. Okay, so, and I will tell you, before this is all said and done, why this is not helpful. So anyways, so the name of the article is Very High Carbon Dioxide Could Suppress Cooling Clouds, Climate Change Model Warns. All right, so, you know, he starts out talking about how cumulus clouds are rather boring. They're just kind of white and wispy. Stratocumulus, those are the ones that are up really high. They're all just white and wispy and stuff. Oh, wait, no. They're not as elegant as the cirrus clouds, those horsetail wisps high in the sky, or as majestic as the cumulus clouds. But stratocumulus clouds hover low in the sky and create vast decks of cloud cover, and they have a supreme value in our warming world. Okay, so fine. Because the white tops reflect lots of solar radiation back into space. Okay, so, okay, got it. I'm there. Second paragraph. And I'm going to read this without commentary, and then I will comment later. Here we go. Quote, "But Earth's broad portfolio of clouds in the year 2019 could potentially be altered by extreme climate change, period. Those stratocumulus cloud decks could vanish, further intensifying global warming." Oh, that doesn't sound good. So, anyways, and the writer goes on to say that's the unsettling conclusion from this study that was published in Nature's Geoscientist that was based on a computer model that provides a new warning that climate change could deliver surprises on top of the already existing. So the idea is, The idea is that if you have, quote, very high carbon dioxide levels, that could actually suppress the formation of these stratocumulus clouds. And so the article quotes Tapio Schneider, a climate scientist at Caltech, who hypothesized that very high levels, blah, blah, it could suppress the stratocumulus cloud decks. Okay, so, et cetera, et cetera. And once you did that, then theoretically you could get a global atmospheric temperature rise that would be 8 degrees above Celsius, whatever warming had already been produced. Now, okay, that would be bad. Okay, I'm just telling you right now, if you get a full 8 degree rise, yeah, that would be bad. Quote, it's a dramatic effect, Schneider told the Washington Post. The stratocumulus cloud decks, quote, break up altogether. All right, now, when that happens, you get far more warming. You know, you get bad things happening. Okay, now, this is about the point. If TLDR people ever even make it this far, this is about the point where they would quit. Now, there is a paragraph that runs in front of that, says the effect appeared if intense CO2 reached 1,200 parts per million, 3 times the current level, which is already much higher than the pre-industrial level of carbon dioxide. Okay, so if CO2 reached 1,300 parts per million, the new report states, the global atmospheric temperature could rise 8 degrees. Okay, so there's tossing these numbers out. Okay, so then you start getting at this, the TLDR people at this point, of course, are bouncing off the ceiling because this is just another indication that the sky is falling, that everything is going to turn into a burning desert wasteland soon, because you'll remember at the beginning of the article, it was stated that, quote, but Earth's broad portfolio of clouds in the year 2019 could potentially be altered by extreme climate change. Okay, that's the statement. And so then what's interesting is that the article then goes on to start talking to other people like Kerry Emanuel. And he's an atmospheric scientist at MIT. And Kerry Emanuel says, quote, well, what he's done is certainly plausible, but these clouds are really hard to simulate. It provides a plausible but not yet proven route by which you could have a tipping point in the climate. Okay, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, then we go on and the article says, well, there's really no easy way to test whether the clouds would really behave this way in a world with such alarmingly high concentrations. What's certain, okay, here we go. What's certain is that a spike of 8 degrees Celsius, in addition to warming already baked in the cake from the greenhouse gas emission, would presumably, so it's certain, presumably, be catastrophic. Not only for human civilization, but for countless species and ecosystems jolted by the rapid climate change. Okay. So all of a sudden you got people going, well, that's an interesting model, but it's really hard to look at and hard to predict. And, you know, and then they go on to say, well, there's no real way you could test this. Except that 8 degrees would be really bad. Okay. Okay, now, then we get to the paragraph that says, since the start of the Industrial Revolution, when people began burning fossil fuels on a vast scale, temperatures have risen about 1 degree Celsius. Okay, and with the global warming driven by the rise in atmospheric carbon dioxide. Okay, maybe there's a correlation there, maybe. From about 280 parts per million to more than 400 parts per million, a level surpassed in 2013 for the first time in recorded history. Okay, so in other words, in case you missed it, we're talking about an increase from 280 to 400 since we've been burning fossil fuels. Okay, industrial age. What is that? Mid-1800s? 150 years of industrial age, and we've put 120 parts per million into it, and they're saying these effects would appear at 1,300 parts per million. So what they're saying is that we've been going on for 150 years, and we have put approximately one part per million carbon dioxide into the air because of burning of fossil fuels. And these effects won't appear for another 900 years or so if we keep going at this rate. And in the article, the author of the article actually writes the statement at the end of this paragraph I'm on right now, quote, "It is hard to imagine a world with anything near 1,300 parts per million CO2. And then he goes on to say, Schneider, for one, does not think such extreme levels of CO2 will actually materialize, simply because he assumes that human civilization will find a way of putting all that carbon, find a way to avoid putting all that carbon into the atmosphere. Okay, so the scientist himself that ran these models says, yeah, this is probably not going to happen. Okay, so, you know, so then another climate scientist says, well, whenever you see a surprising result in a climate model, you get concerned that the model itself is just too tippy, that there's something that should be stabilized in the model, et cetera, et cetera. And then they go on to say, well, but, you know, there was this really high heat era in the past, and so maybe, you know, this kind of contributes to that, so that must be a factor, and yada, yada, yada. And so then they go on, and they're kind of backing their way all the way down. So by the time you get to the end of the article, it turns into, well, this is an interesting phenomenon, but there's not really any way to prove that this would happen. But, you know, it's something that maybe would explain some things that might have happened in the olden days before there was even an industrial age, because in the really olden days, there were a whole lot more carbon in the atmosphere than there is now, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, having said all that, I bring you back then to to the second paragraph, and let me read this again. Quote, but Earth, the second paragraph, okay, this is what the TLDR people would read if they read anything beyond the title of the article. Quote, but Earth's broad portfolio of clouds in the year 2019 could potentially be altered by extreme climate change. Those stratocumulus cloud decks could vanish, further intensifying global warming. Now then, here's how we would write that sentence. Rewrite the sentence. It's not going to be great, but at least it'll be clearer. If we assume that the guy just did a bad job writing this paragraph, what he could really be saying here is, but Earth's broad portfolio of clouds that exist in the year 2019, in the far-flung future when everything is not grand and glorious and somehow we reached the astronomically high carbon levels of 1,300 parts per million, at that point, in the future, probably 900 years from now, Earth's cloud deck that we enjoy today could potentially be altered by extreme climate change. That's how that sentence should be written. Because I think if we're going to just say that he wrote this sentence not very well, you could interpret this sentence as being he's saying, okay, we have clouds in 2019, but at some point in the future we won't if there's extreme climate change. But that is not how this sentence is going to be interpreted. And so either he wrote the sentence poorly, or he wrote it as an alarmist, and that is not helpful. You know, I was just talking with a buddy today about this, and I was talking to him about the fact that this is not helpful. And the reason it's not helpful is because the people who are vested in not making any change to the current industrial network when you do this kind of thing, they just look and snort and say, anybody who says, well, all the stratocumulus clouds are going to disappear in 2019 because they read this article. Well, they read first two paragraphs of the article. You know, all the industrialists are going to look at that and say, no, it's not. Read the rest of the article. And so you don't accomplish anything by this type of thing. Now we can say it was an honest mistake. You know, or we could say that the Washington Post has to get clicks. The Washington Post wants to get links. The Washington Post wants to have their articles retweeted, rebroadcast. They want to stir up information so that maybe people will come to the Washington Post and maybe they'll get more alarmed at the type of articles they find there and maybe they'll subscribe. Because at this point, as we talked about weeks ago now, advertising is not good for papers. And papers have to do something else. And what they're going to do is they're going to get increasingly polarized and they're going to produce articles that are polarizing articles, that are alarmist articles, so that people will throw up their hands and come, you know, screaming and running. But then they can still point down to the bottom of the article and say, well, you just didn't read far enough. You know, that article was, you know, it's just like, okay. And I think it's this type of stuff that ends up filtering down for people who are having these emotional reactions. And so then you get Congress people who are actually making the claim that we're all going to be dead in 10 years because of climate change, that we're all going to die, so we have to do something immediately, like we have to retrofit every single building in America for renewable energy. We have to completely do away with all fossil fuels in 10 years, and we need to concentrate on high-speed trains because we just need to ground planes because planes are bad. So high-speed trains. And you just go, oh, hold up. I mean, I was visiting with my buddy today and, you know, he said, I just don't see that we're going to be able to make any change and it's probably going to get a lot worse. And I agreed with him. I said, yeah, it's really hard for human beings to really do something about climate change. I mean, the Earth is just this amazing thing. And who knows what really lies ahead of us and how the Earth can rebalance itself. It's a really amazing engine. It just really is. But we may be working on it to the point that we're going to make ourselves miserable. You know, and then we'll get clever and then we'll see what happens next. But I really don't think we're going to be able to make progress simply because we have these kinds of easily diffused, easily debunked articles that seem designed, although we will give him the benefit of the doubt, and maybe it's just poorly written, that seemed designed to get people running around like Chicken Little saying that the sky is falling. Because that's not going to help anything. But it will give rise to more tribalism, which, of course, the world, the flesh, and the devil, that's, of course, we want more tribalism because that's where destruction comes from. So it's going to be really fascinating. It's going to be really fascinating to see how things move forward. And frankly, it'll be really fascinating to see what does happen with the climate. There are some interesting prophecies about the end times and, you know, some things of weather patterns and stuff. But, you know, who knows? For now, it was a good week. We got some good things accomplished. Going into the weekend, I got a whole bunch of writing I need to do this weekend. Jesus is going to help us through it all. And Jesus was faithful, faithful this last week. Whispering, helping. And tomorrow's crazy t-shirt, crazy socks day. I think it's unicorn day tomorrow, too. So it's going to be a little cold, but that's okay. I'll just tell people, look, spring is coming. It'll be fun. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.